Welcome to Books and Beyond with your hosts, Karen and Louisa. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl.
Kia ora, listeners. Kia ora, Louisa.
Kia ora, Karen.
Well, we're into February now. It's back to school, back to work. But Aucklanders are still enjoying summer. I'm going to say for myself, but I'm sure many Aucklanders are still enjoying weekends at the beach because it is still summer. And there's something even almost more precious, don't you think, Louisa, when you've only got that afternoon rather than they're stretching out endlessly in front of you. It's summer vacation. You've got that weekend at the beach and you just get to go out there and relax and while away the time. So I have an interesting story, self-deprecating story about myself. I always thought I have such, you know, as a librarian and avid reader, that I had such a good vocabulary and did not make grammatical mistakes, but I discovered a very interesting one that I've been making for all my life, which is while away the time.
No,
I always thought it was, yes, horrors.
While away the time.
While away the time. So I always thought it was while away the time, like being wily, using your wiles to fill the time. And actually, I discovered very recently that it's while away the time with the H, and it comes from that same word, like while I was doing something, and it's a very antique way of using the word while, which means pass the time pleasantly, which I, it's the only way that while is still used. It's in every other form is obsolete, in every other form referring to time.
Wow, that's an interesting fact and a bit of perhaps trivia. Thank you.
Well, also maybe encouraging to other people who realize at a certain age that they've been saying a word wrong their whole life. We just want to say join the club.
I think I'm guilty of that one too. Perhaps I could just
start
our own dictionary.
Yeah, exactly. So possibly one of your ways of making time pass pleasantly on the beach could be reading up on vocabularies, or mine could be. So, you know, you don't have to use your wiles to make time pass pleasantly, but if you do want to use your wiles, we have some ideas for you today, don't we, Louisa?
We do indeed.
For how to do that better.
We do indeed. Well, it's not just the beach days, it's those long summer evenings. And I don't know what you Californians get up to, Californian families get up to in the evenings, but in New Zealand we like to play trivia games, hence my reference, but thinking about trivia when you were talking about while away. But well, thinking about those long evenings and my boys and everyone, one of the favourites with the boys is the sports questions underneath the bed, bottle caps. I don't know if you've
ever tried
that.
The Tui bottle caps.
The Tui bottle, yeah, where they, you know, pop open a bottle and there is the question, a sports question, and everyone has a go at answering it. And and then if you don't get it right, you know, you go, what's the next one? You know, so.
Oh, I knew there were questions, but I didn't realise there were sports questions, so that's just as well I didn't volunteer myself for any team looking at Tui bottle questions.
No, so I don't.
My failure.
It's not my area of expertise either. But I do have a trivia question for you that is in our area of knowledge. Are you ready?
Yeah? Yes, I'm ready.
Okay.
Standing by.
Here we go. Which book holds the world record? I think this is too easy for you because there lies the clue to the answer. As to the best selling copyrighted book of all time.
Well, I thought it was Valley of the Dolls when I saw the list of best-selling. This is best-selling or most read?
Best-selling.
I always thought it was Valley of the Dolls, but
it's the question.
No,
I'd go for best read as well.
All right. Well, tell me, enlighten me.
I didn't expect that answer from you.
I happen to have looked at many a list of top 10 best-selling books in my time.
And perhaps it's because, unlike me, you know, maybe you didn't spend as much time in the shelves at the children's area in the library. So,
as a child or as an adult?
As an adult working in the library.
Right.
So the answer is the Guinness Book of World Records. It sold a whopping 140 million books globally since the beginning.
But presumably, I just want to put out there, librarians know a lot about statistics. This is a book which gets rewritten every year.
That's
so we're
right.
Looking at something like 100 books.
Guaranteed.
Actually,
sales.
It's not like going against a novel which gets written once and then people have to keep reading the same one.
Yeah, yeah. We're not comparing apples with apples here.
Apples with oranges. We are comparing apples with apples.
Another bit of trivia to research. So not a bad for a reference book, though, don't you think? So it was started in the 1950s because the then manager of Guinness Brewery, which hence the name, wanted to know, while out on a shooting trip in a country island, what was the fastest gaming bird in Europe? And so no reference book could tell him, and there the seed was planted for a trivia book to help promote Guinness beer. So, you know, that book that they reference for pub quiz nights and things like that. In fact, the first ever, it was called, I can't remember what it was called now, Guinness Superlatives, that's right, was a giveaway. And from there, he recruited some fact-finding researchers from Fleet Street, twin brothers, can't recall their names at the moment, and hence, and that's where the Guinness Book of Records dynasty, I guess, started, because it's huge. But I really... I gave reference to the children coming into the library.
Yeah.
Because
why don't you read them one? I see you've got the book there in your hand.
Yeah, I have bought in the 2018 Guinness Book of Records. So it's not something you take to the beach, but in the library after school, in the
Why don't you read us
library.
An example?
I will get to one, Karen. Thank you. How the kids just run in, they race for the book. I don't know what questions they've been asking during the day, and they're searching up and they're looking for the answers in this book. So it's still is a very popular read amongst I guess mostly boys. But yes, to get to the 2018 book.
Because I failed so miserably on the most copyrighted book, most sold book. Let's try one of these.
So you know how, when you're looking for facts, it's something that interests you. So for me, it was New Zealand features as the makers of the largest licorice all sort ever, made by RJ's Licorice in Levin, and there it carries on giving the size and the weight of the largest licorice all sort, which it's not everyone's cup of tea, licorice all sort, but it is mine.
So how much did it weigh?
Oh, 27 kilos.
27 kilos. Lucky there's not a metaphor about raining licorice all sorts, like there's raining chocolate fish. So,
of course, there's the usual facts and world records in the book, but you have something that you want to share with us right now, Karen.
Well, I was just thinking about the fact of talking about using trivia as a conversation starting point, and it's interesting because a lot of people would say that if you read books about the anthropological side of English, particularly British society, there's always this thing about talking about the weather, so it's not to get into anything too personal. And I was talking about the weather. So I think at the beach, whiling away the time, one of the best things to do is looking for shapes in the clouds. I really enjoy looking for what the clouds look like. And from that, you can move on to talking about the weather. So I've just grabbed two wonderful books in the library about talking about the weather. The first one is by a meteorologist whose name is Storm. Did I make that clear? Storm with an M.
Oh, Storm
Dunlop.
Yeah.
It sounded like Storm for a minute. Storm Dunlop, and that's his real name. So apparently when Mr. Dunlop wrote his first book, they actually made him write it under a pseudonym because they thought that people would not believe that his name was Storm. But then later, when he's made his reputation, he was allowed to actually come out and use his
real name. I guess he was always going to become a meteorologist for that, being christened with that name.
Nominative determinative. So he's written 11 books, including one on extraterrestrial intelligence. So this one is a weather miscellany called Come Rain or Shine, and I think it's very handy for learning some terminology. It's quite factual, but it has interesting terms when you want to chat about the weather. For instance, the term fox. Did you know, Louisa, that a fox is a single fine day between spells of bad weather?
It's about the same way as the animal.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that at all.
In Pembrokeshire, maybe it's the single fine day, maybe it's the fox among the chickens is what I was thinking, the single fine day. But the other one, which I like even better, is written by the Gavin Prater-Pinney of the Cloud Appreciation Society, and it's called The Cloud Spotter's Guide. So you can already tell we're reaching a different dimension here. The Cloud Appreciation Society was set up in England by this very Gavin Prater-Pinney. Penny, who's, and their motto is look up into the sky. And their motto is the blue, and their mission is to point out that blue skies are actually boring and clouds are what, are really what inspires us in life. Nature's poetry. And it's got this wonderful,
I have to agree with them there too.
Yeah. And it goes to, it's very imaginative and it goes on to tell you all about all the different kinds of clouds. There are 10 different kinds and the subsets of clouds. Very good for librarians. A lot like the Dewey Decimal System. And then a wonderful, excursion that Gavin himself takes to the fish market to find a mackerel to see why a mackerel sky, if it really does look like a mackerel. And he finds that, yes, it does look just like the king mackerel, which is interesting because, interesting to me also because living in New Zealand where people say the mackerel sky is, but when I lived in Italy, people used to call it the sheep sky. The mackerel sky in Italy is actually known as cielo pecorella, which means a sheep's sky. It looks like a little sheep rather than the scales on a mackerel.
So you were expecting...
I would have thought the sheep sky sheep would have been in New Zealand. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so weather, always a good topic.
Yes. So,
speaking of, did you know?
Did you know? Did you know? That's right. He caught me there. I found a million years in a day and, being curious, not curious about the sky, but curious about everyday life. I mean, we are, aren't we? We sort of go, oh, I wonder how, I wonder what in our everyday life. So Greg Jenner, has written this book where he's, it's really quite clever. He's taken every day, going through a day, you know, getting up in the morning, going to work, and referenced it back to how people used to do it in the day, or referenced back to the history of such musings. And so one of my favourites is Time is Money. So he writes in this very entertaining way because apparently this is his first book, but he has been a contributor to Horrible Histories, again, a very popular read with children in the library, and so always very entertaining. So as time is money, he talks about as we drowsily sit up in bed, warm covers pulled over our chest, we look again at the clock on our bedside. It's a relaxing Saturday morning and there's nothing we must do for several hours, yet we can't help obsessing over time. And so it's no coincidence, here we go, back in time, that the 13th century, which birthed the mercantilism that supercharged many European cities into economic powerhouses, also witnessed the debut of the mechanical clock, these massive devices that were perched high in civic bell towers. So instead of silent sundials, seemingly ignored by most Romans, they acted as constant noisy reminders of the here and now, of the slippery, fleeting resource of useful business hours during which you could be put out on the streets raking in the cash like a medieval Donald Trump but with less ridiculous hair. So, so better timekeeping had obviously spawned a new obsession with profit and efficiency, yet within a few centuries, profit and efficiency would spawn a new obsession with better timekeeping. So I think very apt in our productivity-driven busy times, that little excerpt. Actually, my favourite chapter in this book is the one on champagne, which we won't indulge in on this half-hour break.
Break. Let's turn it into a break. Let's pour the champagne, turn it into a break. Yeah, so that's funny because I had just been thinking about questioning and how another really great thing to do to while away the time is to ponder the big questions. And I found this wonderful book called, this is actually called, Can a Bee Sting a Bee? You might wonder why I had to double check the title, since it was a very simple title.
But one of the big questions in life, yeah, is it?
Well, it's not, actually. This is what I thought was so interesting. So the book is actually called, it comes with a blurb from Maria Popova from the wonderful blog or website, whatever it is, Brain Pickings. And it's got, it's called Can a Bee Sting a Bee and Other Big Questions from Little People. And what it's done, which is really great, is they've got all these questions that kids tend to ask you. So we're talking, you know, the family holiday here, driving the car or lying on the beach. And they're all answered by experts in the field, a different expert for each question. I don't know why they picked Can a Bee Sting a Bee, which is one of the least interesting of the big question. So it's got, why is the sky blue? A classic, which I don't think we need to answer here because that's pretty easily Googled. But it's also got...
Or is it's probably in your sky clouds book.
Well, possibly not, because that's about clouds to make the sky not blue. But possibly in an epilogue. It does have in the sky book a thing about why in the Middle East people wish for clouds. They're brainstorming is not blue sky thinking, but it's actually cloudy thinking, because they're so used to blue skies that clouds, so it's all relative.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to my can a bee sting a bee. So they've got this wonderful one. Why can't animals, this is just an example, why can't animals talk like us? And Noam Chomsky is the person they've picked to answer it. And how does Noam Chomsky answer this tricky question? He actually says animals don't talk at all. They have a way of communicating, which is they have a list of things that they can communicate, but the difference between them and humans is they can't say new things. They can't build on new things. And he points out, we do that all the time. So that was a pretty show of faith from Noam Chomsky, that people are always saying new things all the time. I'm not sure. I might be a little more cynical.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here thinking, and how does he know that? So the question's just never ended.
Yes, he's lived a long time, so, and he still believes that people are saying new things all the time. So, and then the other one that I thought was quite funny for children on vacation with their parents is, there's one question which is, why do monkeys like bananas? I'm sure that lots of kids have asked this question. And then they point out, so it's answered by a zookeeper from the London Zoo, and he gives a lot of reasons that they're good energy and they're easy to eat and so on. But he pointed out that some monkeys, this is a fact you might not know, have trouble peeling bananas. And so instead of peeling the banana, what they do is they roll it with their hands, their little monkey hands, really hard, and the banana shoots out of one end of the husk, or whatever you call it, the peel.
Really?
Yeah, so there's a fact for you.
Oh, I was just picturing a banana all ready to be mixed into a banana cake mix of, you know, rolling, you know, mushing.
Oh, rolling it with
banana.
A rolling pin. Possibly. Yes. No, this is actually using the banana like a rolling pin.
But, okay.
A new fact to add to your...
Yeah. Well, again, I'm questioning that because I just can't picture a banana popping out of its skin. But anyway, I just picture bananas getting all mushy in the, like when I carry one in my bag. But so there is the
they do get mushy. You're right. Sorry, took me a moment to get that. Yes, they do in your bag. But they do make little plastic containers for carrying bananas.
Oh, we should
very
get one
librarian
to the
type thing. Yeah, get one for the monkeys. So speaking of facts,
yes, but. There is the book on fact checks, like what we're doing right now, checking the facts. There's the fact checking trivia book. And our own Max Cryer, entertainer, singer, and also TV quiz host, has written one. It's titled, Is It True? The Facts Behind the Things We've Been Told. And he says in his introduction, there comes a time somewhere towards the end of childhood when concepts previously believed to be true are gradually revealed to be illusory. It isn't Santa Claus who brings the presents or the tooth fairy who leaves the money under your pillow. But the capacity to believe these early reality checks and into adulthood, many people accept what they've been told without examination. Several generations have been surrounded by advertising claims and that reality TV shows are not contrived is the one that people seem to believe. I'm not sure. Surely we know. And so he goes on to debunk and explain a range of sayings and quotes and, you know, sort of inherited beliefs, I guess, that we come across every day. Like some of the ones that you've been bringing up today, Karen, so I don't need to...
Does he talk about monkeys and bananas?
No, he doesn't. He's got, let me see, the things we, they're under chapters, so the things we say, and so sayings, their originations, and things like that. Oh, there's one on condoms. Do you think
go
you should
for
do
it.
That? Condoms are named after King Charles II's physician, Mr. Condom. This is a really good story, he says. Pity it isn't true. A popular read at the moment, though, is also along the same lines of don't believe everything that you read to be true or assume to be fact, is presented in a more serious tone by Dr. Hans Rosling. The book is simply titled Factfulness. And so 10 things we're wrong about in the world and why things are better than you think. He's a bit of an optimist, but he has found the facts to back it up. And so his method has been to, well, actually, sorry, he died, passed away in 2017, but he used to do a lot of TED Talks and conference presentations at conferences around the world. And he gave his audiences a selection of questions with multi-choice answers and testing their assumptions. And so the questions are on page 3 in the book. And they're questions like, how many of the world's one-year-olds have been vaccinated against some disease? So Karen, do you want to have a go at this? The choice of the answers is A, 20%, B, 50%, C, 80%.
I forgot the question. How many something about vaccinations? What was it?
How many, I'll read it more slowly. How many one-year-olds have been vaccinated against some sort of disease?
And what are my three choices?
20%, 50%, 80%.
In the whole world, I'm going to say, unfortunately, 20%, but maybe 50 at the most.
Okay. And you are amongst the 77% in the world who get that wrong. It's actually 80%. So
really?
You can see why he's trying to tell us the world is better off than we think it is. So he doesn't like the titles developed and undeveloped countries. He believes we are more fluid and upwardly mobile than that. And so he's plotted the world at 4 levels based on income and lifespan. And you'll be pleased to know that New Zealand is in the highest to level 4. But I, fun fact from it, one of the measures he uses to, you know, gauge how well we're doing is he uses guitar ownership around the world. Apparently, as countries become more sort of middle class, the parents aspire for their children to learn music. And a guitar is one of the most accessible. So he has this little chart. I don't know where he gets
it. Does it count ukuleles with guitars? Could it be any string?
No, he's just said
banjos
guitars.
And ukuleles don't count?
No.
I kind of think that would skew you towards this sort of specific demographic. I think they should have included all instruments with strings. That, you know, the wonderful pianos with the strings they have in Africa. What are thumb pianos? It's a little stringed instrument, but it sounds like a piano.
Okay.
We can't write him. He's died. But this is a quite recent book, isn't it?
Well, he works with his daughter and son-in-law.
He worked it. He died.
So they must carry on his work. They have a website where you can check all these facts.
So this is his final passing on to us of his lore, because did he die? It's a new book,
Yes, it's a new book. Very popular in the library at the moment. He passed away in 2017 and the book came out in 2018.
Right.
But they do have a website where you can check all their facts. So we'll have to do that about the guitars.
That's a very good lead-in to my next book, which is A Treasure from the Basement.
Ooh! Ah!
Treasures from the basement!
Because speaking of when there's a fact, what's the opposite of when there's a fact? Is when it's just gossip, am I right? Fact or fiction?
Fact or fiction, yes.
Yeah, fact or fiction, fact or gossip. So isn't something that people do when they're sitting around on a beach, I think, gossip. Am I right?
Oh, okay. No? I'm not sure, actually. I just enjoy the moment, but yeah.
Right.
Who's gossiping, by the way?
Well, who's gossiping? Anybody who's talking about other people, actually. Anybody's talking about other people. It can be more or less humorous. It can be more or less serious. It can be more or less pernicious. It can be more or less deprecating. But I'm going to go with just the fun gossip. I believe in fun gossip.
Yes.
And my book is called The Merry Wives of Battersea and Gossip of Three Centuries.
Oh, wow. That sounds really interesting.
So if you look at this picture on the cover, you'll see it's also very timely. Just showing everyone, this is a very Stuart portrait here on the cover of Henrietta Lady Luxborough. And I'm saying timely because of the great popularity right now of the movie, which I have not yet seen, but which I want to see, which is The Favourite, Olivia Colman being one of my absolute favourite actresses. So the Stuarts are a bit in our in the zeitgeist at the moment with this popularity of this movie, not to mention your story about Charles II's doctor condom. And in fact, Charles II plays a major part in this role because this book is about the house called Old Battersea House. And the first, or at least one of the earliest dwellers, was the Earl of Rochester, who was one of Charles II's favorite courtiers, and who possibly did not, however, heed Dr. Condom's advice and use condoms because he died at only 33 of syphilis, but was an absolutely brilliant poet, although his poems were so filthy that only three of them were published in his lifetime. He was a rake. He was what they call a libertine or a rake. And he was one of the first residents of the house. And then the house, so she, the woman writing the book, Wilhelmina Stirling, who also wrote a book called Coke of Norfolk and His Friends, just giving you the flavor here. So this book was written in the 1950s. Wilhelmina was looking back on three centuries of her house and who had lived there. And she passes, this is, so I'm reading through this book, and lo and behold, what a surprise. I open this page, and there's Lady Di. I open, so I vaguely remember, actually, at the time when our historical periods, Lady Di became Lady Di, began being called Lady Di, that referred to her namesake, her 18th century namesake. And in fact, so you open this book and it says, I'm just opening it, but they've got to be careful with these fragile, with these old pages. So we have this, during Lady Di, so here we go, Diana, daughter of Charles Spencer, Duke of Marlborough, who was a lady of the bedchamber to the Queen. She was beautiful and an accomplished artist and was often employed by the Wedgwoods. And the other adjectives that she uses about her, so we have beautiful is to start with, but then we move on to things such as sprightly, fastidious, and bohemian tendencies. She was an interesting personality. Some thought she was brilliant and some people thought she was, I actually have to use this word. Dr. Johnson called her, I believe it was Dr. Johnson called her, she's just a whore. But anyway, everybody has a different take on Lady Di as in real life, as in our modern Lady Di. And the interesting thing about her is she had two terrible marriages. Well, the interesting thing about her, in those days, the interesting thing about gossip in general is that the gossip is always about people's marriages because women mm-hmm. always had to be married or they were in a nunnery, basically, if they came from an aristocratic family. So she had these terribly unfortunate marriages. First, she had a horrible Lord Bolingbroke, and then he divorced her, which was quite shocking in those days. And she fell in love with somebody named Topham Beauclerk. Isn't Topham, isn't he someone in Thomas and the Tank Engines? Isn't there a Lord Topham? I'm sure of it. Anyway, Topham Beauclerk turned out to be the only person who could have been a worse husband than Lord Bolingbroke. And she had this absolutely terrible marriage and went, but did not get divorced that time. But when he died, she gave herself over to great joy. And, or as Miss Stirling, the author of the book, says, Diana did not feign any hypocritical grief at her final riddance from the bonds of matrimony. Which also sounds quite like modern times and her namesake.
I'm just quietly sitting here thinking, oh, wow, like history is repeating itself.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There's nothing new under the sun, which is why I'm so interested in your friend, what is he, the TED Talk guy, who believes that things are always getting better and new things.
Mr. Rosling.
So we're not quite at the end, but I thought I might put in a plug for what's coming up very soon, starting tomorrow, in fact, is Same, Same, But Different, New Zealand's LGBTI Writers Festival.
Oh, yes, of course. Go ahead, Karen.
Yeah, taking place at AUT. So this is this event through from Monday through to Saturday. You can go online and you can see all kinds of get all the information about who's going to be there. But I'm going to put in a say that two of my favorites who are there. Joanne Drayton is going to be doing an event with Ron Brownson. So actually, it's a few of my favorites. So with Joanne and Ron Brownson from the Auckland Art Gallery, and Joanne Drayton, who wrote the recent biography of Hudson and Halls that she came in and talked about. On our program, Food of Love. And they're going to be doing an event called How to Be Real and Speak the Truth, an event on biography. Well, not called that, but that's what its mission is, to talk about how to be real and speak the truth. And then, quickly, I want to put in for Victor Roger, who is just such an amazing, bold, sharp, funny playwright that New Zealand is, all of New Zealand should be proud to have on their on their horizon, on their conscious, in their consciousness, on their horizon. Everyone should get to know Victor Roger. And my favorite of his plays, my name is Gary Cooper. So look it up. And he'll be on the opening gala event night and possibly other things as well. So
thank you for
will
that.
We see you there? Yes.
A reminder. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so that's our show for today. Keep enjoying those long summer evenings and days at the beach. And we will see you next week. Ka kite anō.
Ka kite anō. This program was brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz
and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/books and beyond. Every day, every day, every day.